the hard issues that drive one of the premier industries in the nation and in the state of North Dakota right now. We're going to talk about oil, and we're going to talk a little bit about the controversies that can come with any talk that you can have when it comes to oil. And I know of no one better to have that conversation with than somebody on the front lines, and that's Jack Ekstrom from Whiting. Jack, good to have you back in studio.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be here. Nice to see you. Be in North Dakota again. What a beautiful day.
If it all stayed like this, we'd have a lot more people living in North Dakota, and you wouldn't be looking for more people to take some of these
jobs.
Only
150 openings, that's all. It's been the same. It seems like it's been the same since I've been coming up here, Joel. We keep hiring people. We're up almost at 950. When I started at Whiting, it was 450. That was 5 years ago.
Okay.
So we've more than doubled in size.
Well, and you're willing to get bigger tomorrow.
Okay. Desperately.
Now, Vicki Steiner is a state legislator from Western North Dakota, and also someone who has worked on behalf of the counties that actually get the oil extracted from. So in other words, she works with the Association of Oil Producing Counties. And she's a state rep from District 37 and exec director of that North Dakota Association of Oil and Gas Producing Counties. And we're going to bring her into this conversation as well. Representative Steiner, good to have you on News and Views.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, and Jack and I were talking about what we do in our usual segment that we do on this. And Jack, one of the reasons we wanted to have Vicki on is to not ignore the issues that the oil producing counties have, but to talk about where we're at with it.
Indeed. Thanks for coming on, Vicki. We're glad you're here. And thanks for the invitation to your annual meeting where I guess I made some news.
You did. And I don't know how far out the news went, but yeah, you did. And I enjoyed some of your little quips. You had a quote about you're judged by the enemies you keep.
You're judged by the quality of your enemies. If the right people dislike you, you're doing something good.
I don't want to have it just be an insider thing here, though. Let's talk about what happened and let people call in like you usually do, Jack, and let them respond to this.
Sure.
The statements that you made at the speech for Vicki's counties, what got you in trouble?
I was explaining, and we'll get into this in a little bit. I was explaining how oil companies think about taxes. What drives us and where does our money get spent? And taxes are always a piece of that. And for some people, they think of taxes as penalties like cigarette taxes and alcohol and so forth. The way we think about them is that it's a necessary burden that we bear to make sure that the places we operate are able to support us, that they have the fire and the emergency and the police and all of the necessary infrastructure, and that's what the money goes for. The point I made was that over time, as this infrastructure gets built out, the state's tax level at 11.5%, and I made the statement that it is an outlier, which sounds like a pejorative, but I didn't mean it to be. It means that it is outside of the norm of most states' tax regimes.
Okay.
So I was asked by a reporter, what should the number be? And I said, I can't say what the number is because I don't know. There are many things, many factors that the state has to employ in determining what its optimum tax rate is. You don't want it to be too high, but you don't want it to be too low. You need to fund your needs. He asked me again, well, what's the number? And I said, I can't tell you that because I don't know what all of the state's considerations are. I'm just an oil and gas guy. I don't know about all of the other worries and considerations and expenditures a state needs to make. Higher education is something that is obviously important, but it's not something I'm good at, chapter and verse. So he asked me again, and he finally asked me, well, if you were going to pick a number, what is a median-like number? What would the number be that would put us in the middle? I said, well, if you wanted to be in the middle, 5% is about falls somewhere in the median there. And then, of course, the headline got written that I said that the state should cut severance taxes by more than 50%, which is not what I said. That is not, and it's certainly not what I meant. What I meant was over time, over a number of years, you probably would want to calculate what your competition is doing because you're competing with Colorado, Texas, Oklahoma, states that may have increases in production, like Ohio, that can attract dollars. And so you want to make sure that you get the incremental barrel and that you have a tax rate that does not put you at a disadvantage to other states who are competing with you.
Vicki, you were there. What did you hear Jack say?
That's what I heard him say. And you know what, Joel? This is the problem. You know, we had a great meeting, and then one little thing by the media gets kind of blown up. And, you know, the issues that I think that your listeners might be interested in as we could move forward, but the media just wants to hammer and hammer and hammer on stuff that in the long run, I mean, we're not going to immediately be lowering the oil tax. But why waste people's time with it right at this moment? I mean, obviously we compete with other states. Obviously we're going to have to look at the oil tax every session. So you're going to take the whole show and talk about that?
Well, but Vicki, was this reporter from the Dickinson Press? Was it from the Forum Communications? Is that what?
He's from the Dickinson Press.
Okay. But I mean, in fairness to him, he's got a job to do, and we're sitting here talking about it on the most listened to talk show. So, you know, he did in part his job, but Vicki, if you heard Jack say what he said, which is, I don't really know, and yet it comes off in the article as though he said cut the oil extraction tax in half, then
right.
Jack, that's
completely... Yeah. Right, they're trying to sell newspapers, and they're trying to say, you know, that he said something. They pulled it out of him, basically, by repeating the question until he finally said, you know, well, you know, the middle is this number, but he didn't ask for that number.
But okay. The other thing is, Vicki, and I know that you know this, is that it was twisted by the headline writer. The headline writer wrote that as the lead of the piece, and that wasn't at all what we were talking about. It was, you know, he had to virtually pull it out of me with a tractor. He could have been a big iron and pulling it out of my head with a tractor.
Okay. Now, one other thing, you know, there's this other elephant in the room. There was some considerations over whether or not you made a racially insensitive comment, Jack. Talk to me about this.
That is true. This reporter tweeted, and I saw this in the blogosphere, and I tracked it down and read it, that a friend of mine when I worked at Evergreen Resources was a gentleman of Japanese extraction, and I was not aware that Oriental was a pejorative or some kind of racially insensitive comment, and I made this statement because we were talking about unitization and how oil companies like the order that is brought by unitizing production in a certain area. And my friend used to say that unitization makes us double happy, which is a thing off of a menu in a Chinese or a Japanese restaurant. It's a double happy entree or double happy dessert. It was just a throwaway line that was not intended to be a pejorative in any way. But this guy tweeted that, the same reporter that wrote the story tweeted this. So I had the feeling that he was out for a gotcha. And so if that is in fact viewed as racially insensitive or some kind of pejorative for Asian Americans, I apologize for that. I did not know that. So I plead, if I'm guilty, I'm guilty because of ignorance.
Okay. So there, we got those two issues out of the way. Now, Vicki, most importantly to me at that meeting was, how did the meeting go? What is the mood of those oil and gas producing counties?
Well, they're looking forward to 2015 because we didn't quite get where we needed to go, although we've made a lot of progress. People have been up to Williston. You'll see that Williston is doing much better. The bypass is helping. We've got several bypasses in progress with DOT. So we're getting the trucks out of the cities. But I thought what was really significant was, you know, Lynn Helms' forecast for oil production and going to 1.6 million, and then also the Tyler, that there could possibly be some Tyler in Slope County, Stark County, in towards the south, which means we don't have enough water capacity in that southwest corner. And so, I mean, in one hand, I serve on the Interim Water Committee, and on one hand, I'm getting messages from some of our leaders out in eastern North Dakota, the people who are your listeners should be aware of this. I get some pressure from eastern legislators saying, you know, Southwest Water Pipeline's been around a while. Can you guys just be done? We don't want to fund you anymore. Can you just be done? well, how do we be done when our lines are too small now if the play moves, the oil play moves to the south? We can't be done. We've got to provide for that population growth to the south. So, you know, those are things that, and I know that, the, you know, we're going to have enough money over time to really take care of our state and do the things we want to do. But we're going to have to make sure that we also work with the growth in the West.
Vicki, you're very respected in your own party, and it's one of the reasons that they nominated you and asked you to run for office. But some of this problem lies in your own party. As you know, the people that are pushing to end the funding of the Southwest Water Authority and say, look, here's a bulk payment. You know, after this, fund it yourself, raise your rates, do whatever you have to. Come from your own party.
The Southwest Water Authority, we actually pay back to the state.
100%. 100%.
We're paying back.
Well, Vicki, you know.
And some of the water projects don't pay back. So, it gets frustrating because we pay back, and yes, it's over a long period of time, and that gets under some of their skins too. But
Vicki, I'm a Southwest Water fan. What you do at Southwest Water is unbelievable, but when we get back, what we need to do is resolve how we get the water to southwestern North Dakota so the economic growth continues. Because I think
Absolutely. You're
going to find that you and I agree on this. But
yep.
We also have to point out where the problem lies and how we fix it. So stick around. Let's do that, Jack. Vicki Steiner, she is the executive director of the oil and gas producing counties. Jack Ekstrom with Whiting Petroleum. Vicki, I want to raise this to you because you raised a very valid and important question. How do you get the water to the industry without tearing up the roads and everything else? And of course, you have long been a supporter of the Southwest Water Authority, which I have. You know, Vicki, I have to throw this at you. There's individuals who fought the Western Area Water Supply. You know who they are. They were there. Bob Harms. I mean, Bob Harms, chairman of the Republican Party, but yet, most importantly, ran independent water supply company. Ed Schaefer was sitting in the very chair that Jack Ekstrom is sitting in. He said one of the abuses of government in the last session and on the sessions before was the Western Area Water Supply. How are you going to turn that mindset around? It seems to me it's in your house, Vicki.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, not everybody's in agreement on it, but you have different water pipeline projects that are always competing for a finite number of dollars. So, you know, it's, I guess I would say it crosses party lines. It's more of a regional battle or tug because, you know, that... Western Area Water Supply has been funded very well, and that really is a tremendous asset to the state. But they have different rules than what Southwest Water Authority had.
Yeah, they do.
Minot, NAWS has, you know, been waiting and waiting for the federal government to give them permission to open their pipe, which is ridiculous that they can't get that pipe open. But anyway, so, and you know, Canada, how do you deal with Canada and their concerns and make sure that they're that's in court right now, but hopefully we can get Minot moving on. They've got a pipeline that's waiting to open. And then you've got Fargo with huge water needs. Fargo came in last session, I think it was $450 million they got in their flood protection money, and I supported that. Fargo is a huge economic engine for the state and a huge population center. I mean, obviously you can't ignore that either. So we did fund that. And the only problem I had with that was we funded water, the flood protection for Fargo before we passed the Western Oil County bill. And I just have a little bit of, feeling about that because, you know, we're generating millions and millions of dollars and we're saving millions and millions of dollars. We're investing all over the state on statewide water projects. And yet... the Western County oil bill was about the last one that went out the door. And it didn't quite get funded fully. And I was told by one of the Republicans that, you know, Vicki, we can't do all the money that was in the original bill. We have to cut it because there's just not enough money. Well, you know, my feeling is next session that Western Oil County bill should come out the door before some of these other projects because that's where the action's happening, and that's what that's our economic engine in the West as well. So there is a tug between more, I would say, regions rather than, you know, it's not just Republicans.
I agree. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's more about where you live and what your interests are and whether or not people can see the forest from the trees. Vicki, grade this last session. For you and the oil-producing counties, which Jack just spoke to, how did you come out of this last session?
The House passed 1358, which was the oil county bill, and it was what the Western oil county supported. The Senate twisted it around in conference committee, and House members helped with that were on the conference committee. And so it turned into something that wasn't supported completely. There's parts of it they support. The counties and cities did pretty well. We've got some schools that took some, if an oil county gets over $5 million, some of our schools took a significant cut. But that was unintended. We didn't get printouts. You know how that goes. When, as a former legislator, you can appreciate that. We didn't get printouts.
Vicki, hang with me. Hang with me. I'm going to get Jack's take as well when we come back on News and Views. Welcome back to News and Views. Jack Ekstrom with Whiting Petroleum is our guest, as is Vicki Steiner. Vicki is the executive director of the oil and gas producing counties of North Dakota. Vicki, you were making a very valid argument about infrastructure and how it crosses party lines. Really that need is there. But it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Vicki, which is how do you do it? And Jack, I'm going to throw this to you now because the statements out of the Dickinson Press, the article by Brian Horwath,
is that how
I think that's how his name is said, says that the article does say this, that you want to cut the oil extraction tax in half. But how do we pay for things like this then?
Well, that's what it says. That's what he says that I said. And Vicki was there, and it's recorded. So if you really want to hear it and hear it in context, it'll be something like this. Whiting Petroleum and other oil companies, I was sitting right next to Brian Kovacevic from Marathon, and we agreed on this. Terry Kovacevic. And we agreed on this that you need every single dollar of tax revenue you can get because the Western counties are not being funded to their needs. So it would be ludicrous to cut taxes now. No one ever advocated that. What I did advocate was that somewhere down the road, when everything is funded and everything's in place and you have adequate police and you have adequate fire and you have adequate emergency and hospitals and all of that, all of the infrastructure you need, you are going to be competing with other states that will be in a growth mode as well. So you would want to calculate what they're doing so that you are competitive with them, whatever that competition level is. And when I was asked what should that number be, I said, I don't know, because I don't. I don't pretend to be a tax expert. But what I did say was if you wanted to land in the middle of what the average or the median is today, it would be about 5% because across Texas and Oklahoma, Louisiana, New Mexico, California, all of the places that have oil and gas activity, that's about the median number. So do I advocate that now? No. Whiting and Marathon and EOG and Continental and everyone wants to have all of this built out to meet the needs of the community. Our employees work here. That's what they need. That's what they want. We have to have that revenue. When I heard it at the producing counties meeting afterwards, when someone came up and asked me a question, he said, we were asked to put forth what we needed, and we put out a number, and what came back to us was 10% of that. That's not going to get it. You need this money invested now. And 10% of your laundry list is not enough. So would I advocate lowering the tax? Of course not. That's not a good idea.
But State Representative Steiner, you know, the one thing that you made perfectly clear is there's need for infrastructure in southwestern North Dakota. This is all coming your way. It's coming your way. And when it comes to the Southwest Water Authority, that's a particular need. Do you see that? And you said at the end of last session, you came last. You wish you would have been ahead of some of these other priorities that people around the state saw. But they put the oil and gas producing counties last, and then they used the argument with you that, hey, we don't have enough money for this. And then let's take it a step further. I'm not going to involve you in this, but just mention the fact that people like Skip Drevdahl, the former Speaker of the House and a Republican from the Watford City area, said, hey, we've got to get new leadership in the Republican side to make this happen. So if that be the case, Vicky, can you possibly imagine a scenario where you can accomplish the needs of the infrastructure and yet slash that funding?
I think so, and I agree with Skip. I think we've got to do things a little bit differently. You know, Joel, when you were a senator, it was more of a just tweak the government a little bit, like just make small changes. Right now, we're in a tremendous historic time in our state. Changes have to be made much larger than some of our more veteran legislators are comfortable with. It's a culture where we just change things, you know, add a little bit, 3%, 2% kind of a thing. And we're having to take the Energy Impact Fund from $8 million to $100 million to $130 million to $240 million. Those rapid increasing dollar amounts drive some of our veteran legislators crazy because they think the change is too quick. But we have to respond to what's happening in our state. The growth is tremendous, and a prosperity with getting shot with a fire hose is basically what it feels like, but it's prosperity. So we have to respond. And so some of the people who have been through our hard times, and I'm not knocking them, I'm not criticizing them at all, because their experience has been, you know, sometimes this good stuff goes away and then you have to make cuts, which are really painful. So for them, it's really difficult to not be as cautious, perhaps. If I've only served two sessions, so I'm probably not, I don't have as much of that history of making those votes on those cuts as they do.
Yeah, but you were there, Vicky. You were there as a lobbyist. You were there as somebody active in the process. I think you don't short yourself on the experience side of it. But what I'm trying to reconcile in my mind is I know the need. And I agree with you that the Southwest Water Authority could be an excellent vehicle for meeting the needs of both the community and the rural members that it would sign up and the communities it would serve along the way and the industry. And yet the biggest fight you're going to have, Vicky, is with people who say this is an abridgment upon capitalism and this hurts capitalism. And that's exactly what former Governor Ed Schaefer said to me.
Well, you know, on that independent water users, you know, they do those small dinner parties that they do during the legislative session. And I went for dinner with them. They explained what they wanted. And I don't know if it was the next day or shortly thereafter, I voted for the water tax that Representative George Kaiser brought to the session because I agree that, you know, you get a $500 permit or whatever you get on commercial water, and then they don't pay any taxes, and those water depots are bringing in thousands of trucks that tear up the roads. So I think the state does need to have a serious discussion on Representative Kaiser's concept of, do we tax commercial industrial water sales? Is it a resource that, you know, we should tax, and then that money maybe has to go back on the roads? Because why should that farmer who lives across from that water depot see his taxes go up to pay for the upkeep of the road? So I think there's, you know, there's some things that we need to look at. You know, times are changing, and it's not always easy.
Not only that, Representative Steiner, but have you ever looked into what the permits that are used to sell basically industrial water now originally were permitted for? For an example,
I mean, irrigation, usually farming.
Exactly. And if you're very close to the Water Commission itself, in fact, a leader in the water industry, and you've permitted in according to irrigation, and the next thing you know, you're selling to the oil industry, tearing up roads, saying, oh, it's terrible for Southwest Water or for Western Area Water. To me, you're a hypocrite.
Well, you know, we're actually trying to make, you know, Western Area Water Supply, that's a concept where you try to get industry to pay for a public good. And so you have to kind of weigh capitalism versus a public good. You know, we don't have pure capitalism. I'm sure that doesn't shock anybody, but we do use government to make it work to the best ends of everybody.
Let's put it this way. For the people that are sitting there saying, look, we know where the oil patch is moving. It's moving south. It's moving southwest. For you, Jack Ekstrom, as an executive with Whiting Petroleum, How big of a fear do you have that the water infrastructure needs, the road needs, all of those things are not going to be there, and we're going to go through this whole thing again that we went through in the Stanley area, and you know what I'm getting at, where the infrastructure won't match up to, and we've had times to deal with it.
The most honest answer I can give you, Joel, is I don't want to think about it because it worries me. I mean, I'm not a Pollyanna, but. I don't even want to consider that as a possibility because it's too awful to think about.
Vicky, I really appreciate your time today. And know you're welcome here on News and Views anytime. I think that more people all over the state, which we're listened all over the state, really want to hear from the oil and gas producing counties. So know that you have an open forum here anytime.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Vicky Steiner, ladies and gentlemen, state representative. Jack, stick around. I want to get your philosophy on taxes as a whole. I want to know where Whiting is at, because it seems to me that you know what was said versus what you're telling me are two different things. Not only that, but I think that for the people of this region in the country, they want to know long term what you think it's going to look like, because for the Vickies of the world and for that matters the legislators in the eastern part of this state, they're way better off addressing these issues now than addressing them, you know, after it hits there.
Indeed.
And next thing you know, you got 20 man camps and you don't even have sewer or water to it. So stick around. Welcome back to News and Views, heard here on the News and Views Radio Network. Jack Ekstrom, in the little bit of time that I have left with you, I want you to speak to this direct question. Where is this going? We all know direction-wise where it's going, south and southwest, but... You know, there's been much to do about taxes and what you feel you said versus what they say you said. But how does this play out in terms of the infrastructure that Vicky was just talking about?
The way it plays out, first of all, let me inform everyone about how oil companies think about taxes, because there's been a lot said about oil companies complaining about taxes. What we do is we know approximately how much money we're going to have to spend next year. Whiting already knows that because we've done a projection on oil prices and we've hedged some. So we know what our number is going to be for next year. What it is right now is immaterial because it's not made public. But the fact is, we know what that number is. And you have that money to spend. And what you'll do is you will rank all of the places that you could spend it where you have an opportunity to drill for oil and gas. And somewhere in there, you will draw a line. And what falls below that line will not get funded. You will not drill it. North Dakota is way above that line now. And as I said, when I was in Dickinson, it's going to be there for quite a while. But over time, when this play matures and it's not as dramatic as it is now, when other plays come on board, for example, like I cited Colorado, where the Niobrara is taking off, and there will be other places, it's almost inevitable. You will want North Dakota to grind in what those other tax regimes are, who they are competing with, so that you make sure you get your fair share. You don't want to lose an incremental barrel of oil or that incremental job because your tax rate is too high. It's not a finite pie. Generally, lower taxes bring more activity, as you well know. If you want less of something, you tax it more, like cigarettes and alcohol. But if you want more of something, you tax it less and you increase the revenue stream. You'll get more dollars at a lower tax rate.
For the average North Dakotan, I think the rub comes in the fact that one of the people that they elected and have a lot of respect for still to this day, Ed Schaefer, ran around the state in an RV saying, if you don't lower it, people like you and other companies will leave. And he said that 2-3 years ago now. Okay. You're still here. You're telling me you
got. And I wasn't with him.
I know that. But and now he serves on the very board of Continental.
And so these
people kind of connect dots. And I'll get blasted saying I just called him corrupt when I didn't say that at all. That isn't what I said at all. What I'm saying is he does have a horse in this race in debate now. He's on the board of Continental. So North Dakotans, number one, don't believe you're going to leave. They know that the oil's here. Right.
We're not.
Number two, they don't believe that at a time when there is such a need from the Vickies of the world about infrastructure, it's time to take away a revenue stream. The biggest problem North Dakotans have is that the legislature is so short-sighted they don't put the money to work.
I'm not going to argue at all with you, Joel. I'm there with you. I believe that every tax dollar you're collecting now is absolutely vital. My point was, down the road, when all of this is done, when the water issues are solved, when you have adequate hospitals, emergency response, adequate schools, teachers, your tax base is secure and sound, and you've saved money, then you're going to want to address this issue.
Okay. Oh,
but not until then, because you have dramatic needs right now.
Well, I'm glad you got a chance to clear up what you said, Jack. I'm glad that you got a chance to say and speak in your own words and let the people of the state hear what you said.
And I appreciate the opportunity, Joel.
I really think
do.
From Vicki Steiner's standpoint, no one can have a tougher job than those people who truly – I mean, I always think of Shirley Meyer, and I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing her tonight. I'm heading out to Dickinson to do a show there tomorrow. And I think of all how hard she's fought for Western North Dakota – and she raised all these issues.
Exactly.
She said, we don't have the legislators. I heard Vicki Steiner today directly say, we need new, fresh leadership to reconsider how we fund these things. Now, that's a risk on Representative Steiner's part.
And it's a debate I prefer not to engage in.
I don't blame
you. As you well know.
I don't blame you. But I also think it's, from Vicki's standpoint, that's a bold move. That's a bold move, is to say that the Al Carlsons and the Dwight Cooks of the world don't have our best interests in mind when it comes to this stuff. So
I'm hopeful that the issues get resolved and there's going to be not many wounds.
10
inflicted.
Seconds, Broncos ever going to lose this season?
It doesn't appear like it, does it?
My Vikings have. I just want you pick a quarterback. That's what we call ourselves.
Yeah.
Jack, good to talk to you as always.
Joel, we'll
Thank
see
you.
Ya.